I think there's a serious danger of a trade war here. These steps are outside of the bounds of sort of normal trade actions.
New U.S. trade tariffs create economic anxiety. It's Monday, March 5th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, we examine a possible trade war involving China. Australia's relations with China become rocky. A Japanese photographer in Africa. Outside help for walking, politics and movies at the Oscars. It's all on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump's administration appears unbowed by broad domestic and international criticism of his planned import tariffs on steel and aluminum, saying Sunday that the president is not planning on exempting any countries from the stiff duties. White House trade advisor Peter Navarro says President Trump is not planning to exempt any countries from his increase in tariffs. Navarro told CNN that final details on Trump's anticipated 25% tax on steel imports and a 10% tariff on aluminum should be completed by later in the week or early next week at the latest. Trump's new tariffs for the key metals have drawn wide condemnation from business-oriented Republican lawmakers in the United States, as well as key allied trading partners Canada and the European Union. But Navarro said the tariffs are needed to protect our national security and economic security, broadly defined. He dismissed concerns from Defense Department officials who voiced support for targeted tariff increases aimed at specific countries, but not increases on the imported metals from throughout the world. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Phil Levy, a senior fellow on the global economy with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, and he was senior economist on trade for the President's Council of Economic Advisers in the George W. Bush administration. Levy believes the proposed Trump tariffs on steel and aluminum would start a trade war that could end up costing U.S. businesses and consumers a lot of money.
I think there's a serious danger of a trade war here. These steps are outside of the bounds of sort of normal trade actions. We have major trading partners who have threatened responses, and the president's reaction has been, then he will escalate. That certainly has all the makings of a trade war.
What would it take to escalate into a trade war? You said retaliatory action either on probably on both sides, right?
That's right. So I think there's no precise definition of what makes for a trade war. I think the rule of thumb one can use is when you start getting uncontrolled spirals of retaliation. So the whole trading system is set up so that if one country does something bad, then another country can file a complaint, get the right to retaliate, they retaliate once, but that's it. This is like, you know, your brother punches you, you get one punch back, you're done. It's when things start spiraling out of control and everybody escalates that you get closer to what we think of as a trade war.
The president tweeted on Saturday that the United States has an $800 billion yearly trade deficit because of our very stupid trade deals and policies, and said our jobs and wealth are being given to other countries that have taken advantage of us for years. They laugh at what fools our leaders have been. No more. What's your reaction?
I think he's got all that exactly backwards, including when they're doing the laughing at the leaders, which I think may be happening now much more than it did before. I think the president has long been fixated on the trade deficit, and he's failed to understand it. The U.S. trade deficit is not a reflection of trade policies. It's a reflection of the fact that we borrow a great deal from the rest of the world. If you are going to borrow from the rest of the world as a country, then you are going to run a trade deficit. And if anything, this president has worked to escalate our borrowing from the rest of the world with a tax bill that had a $1.5 trillion price tag attached.
Draw me up a little scenario of what happens if these tariffs are put into place.
I think if these tariffs are put into place, you get an immediate effect, which is that it is raising the price to some domestic producers. Now, to be fair, since there was some warning, this has been in the works for about a year, some domestic producers may have stockpiled a bit, so it wouldn't necessarily be an immediate hit, but it will eventually be a hit. You know, as you will note, very, very few of us actually consume aluminum or steel as individuals. These are inputs into other products. And so this is an increase in costs, which will either cut into, you know, corporate well-being, undoing the benefits of the tax cut, or it will get passed along to consumers, and that'll raise prices. Raising prices, that is probably going to prompt the Fed to act more quickly to raise interest rates and try and slow the economy down and head off inflation. Meanwhile, you have other countries whose imports have been blocked, where they see violations of global trading rules, saying that they're not going to sit down and take it. We've already heard that from Europe. We've heard that from Canada. And they will start to selectively attack key American exports.
The effect on the global economy could be large. Stay with VOA Asia as we continue our discussion in just a moment with Phil Levy on potential trade impacts of the new Trump tariffs in Asia. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. China doesn't want trade war, but says it will respond if necessary. China defends planned scrapping of presidential term limits. High-level South Korean delegation to hold discussions with the North. Bangladesh police say writer was attacked as enemy of Islam. Papua New Guinea reels from powerful tremor. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We continue with our look at U.S. trade and what President Trump's new tariffs announcement could mean for the world and Asia specifically. Canada is the largest U.S. trading partner. It could be hit the hardest. Since last year, it shipped $7.2 billion worth of aluminum to the United States and steel valued at $4.3 billion. The tariffs would also hit other U.S. allies, Britain, Germany, South Korea, Turkey, and Japan. But China, the world's biggest steel producer, only sends 2% of its supply to the United States and would be less affected. We continue with VOA Asia's Ira Melman's discussion with Phil Levy, a senior fellow on the global economy with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and was a senior economist on trade for the President's Council of Economic Advisers in the George W. Bush administration.
This broadcast is aimed primarily to Asia. Let's talk about China a little bit, specifically when it comes to these tariffs and so far what has happened in the Trump administration as far as trade relations are concerned. Where does it stand?
Well, the one thing I will note about these tariffs and China is this is an instance in which the Trump administration took a shot at China, missed, and managed to hit all of the U.S. allies instead. So China does not even make the top 10 in terms of sources of steel imports for the U.S. Countries like Japan and Korea do. So the countries that the U.S. would be hitting, should these tariffs be applied this next week, would predominantly be our allies, both in Asia and around the world. You asked, I think, about sort of broader trade relations with China. They've been very conflicted. The administration had good summits with China. They struck an early trade deal. China was forthcoming in trying to negotiate an additional deal with Wilbur Ross over steel capacity. The president evidently turned that down last year and said he wanted to do tariffs instead. So it's been a very there's a lot of indication that China is going to be in the future the target of new U.S. trade actions on subjects like intellectual property. This particular action hits others far more than it hits China.
Well, there's also, if we go back to steel, there are things like retaliatory actions for China buying its ever-expanding air fleet from Airbus rather than Boeing, right?
That's absolutely the case. In fact, one of the stocks that you saw fall most sharply when the president made his announcement was Boeing. And your example is a perfect one because there are these discretionary purchases. And if countries want to express their irritation, they may well, when possible, choose to buy big-ticket items from someone other than a big name-brand American supplier.
What is your expectation as far as what China would take as far as retaliatory measures are concerned if these tariffs are implemented?
if China does anything, they've given some indication that they will go after some farm products, things like U.S. exports of sorghum. China may decide just to sit back on this one and hold off, since it will have other things to deal with coming fairly soon, and because this predominantly is the U.S. taking shots at its allies. And so China can just grab the popcorn and watch.
So who is hurt the most? White House trade advisor Peter Navarro said on Sunday that President Trump is not planning to exempt any countries from the tariff increase on steel and aluminum coming from foreign shores. Does that change anything?
If they just go straight up and apply this across the board, the biggest target of it all is going to be Canada, because that's the number one, at least for steel, that's the number one U.S. supplier. We also have a heavily integrated aluminum industry. One of the quirks of this, when one decides to miss all nuance, as President Trump has, is that you actually had the United Steelworkers in the U.S. asking that Canada be exempt on aluminum, exactly because there is this tight integration, I think, both on the manufacturing side, but also on the labor side.
Is there anything that might stand in the way of President Trump implementing these tariffs?
I think one of the really key things to watch for next steps is what the U.S. Congress does. You had had some key leaders, such as Orrin Hatch, the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, which oversees trade, say that if the president were to take this sort of action, Congress would step up. I think you're going to see a lot of the retaliation targeted at key members of Congress and their districts so that they feel the pain. The Constitution actually gives Congress authority over trade policy, although over the years they've delegated this a bit to the executive branch. So that's the real key question. What comes next? Will Congress act?
Phil Levy, Senior Fellow on the Global Economy with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Happening now in Asia, Krishna Kumari Kohli has been elected to Pakistan's Senate, becoming the first senator from the predominantly Muslim country's low-caste Hindu minority. Members of parliament and provincial assemblies voted to fill the seats of the upper house of parliament. Elections for the lower house will take place this summer. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's Monday morning. We're glad you're starting out your week with us on VOA Asia. A high-ranking Australian diplomat has acknowledged Canberra's relationship with its largest trading partner, China, is enduring a period of complexity and difficulty. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports the candid comments from the head of the Australian Foreign Affairs Department came during a parliamentary hearing in Canberra.
Relations between Australia and China are rarely without problems or tensions. In recent months, Canberra introduced its biggest overhaul of intelligence laws in decades to try to combat foreign interference in domestic politics. While the Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull spoke of disturbing reports about Chinese influence in Australia, he has insisted the new measures were not aimed at one particular country. However, Beijing reacted with displeasure and said it had no intention of meddling in Australia's internal affairs. Those tensions still persist, according to Australia's most senior public servant. Frances Adamson, the head of Australia's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, says the bilateral relationship is often fraught with turbulence.
Our relationship with China, there are, whichever government is in power in Australia, there are periods when the Chinese are not completely in agreement with everything that we might want to do in our national interests. It's important for us to assert that.
Another area of tension is the South China Sea. Australia has always advocated for freedom of navigation in international waters in the strategic waterway. But China claims sovereignty over most of the South China Sea, including a group of small islands, directly challenging the territorial claims of its neighbours, Malaysia, Vietnam, the Philippines and Taiwan. Australian Defence Minister Maurice Payne says Canberra will continue to assert its rights in the region.
Certainly in the last 12 to 18 months, 2 years really, we've made some quite significant increase in our activity in the region. And last year, the Australian Defence Force executed the largest joint task group that we have had in decades through the region.
Canberra must tread a delicate diplomatic line between China, its largest trading partner, a relationship that's underpinned recent Australian prosperity, and its long-standing military alliance with the United States that dates back to the early 1950s. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
News alert from VOA Asia. South Korean President Moon Jae-in will send a high-level special delegation to North Korea today to discuss ways in which relations can be improved and to ease tension on the peninsula. That mission could be complicated by planned annual military drills with the United States in April. Make your mission to visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Daichi Yamamoto is a Japanese photographer who has called Senegal his home for the past 2 years. His work captures local fashion, and he's helped launch the careers of several Senegalese fashion models. For VOA, Chika Odua gives us a more complete picture from Dakar.
With every snap, Japan native Daichi Yamamoto is reminded about what he loves most about Senegal. He moved here from New York City 2 years ago.
When I initially came to Senegal, I was very impressed with the colorful dresses, which, in the U.S., people, when I came, people started dressing up like that kind of dress. But then here, people wear as a culture, and I was very impressed of those, rich culture. But also, when it comes to the photography in Africa, I see a lot of poverty, some negative images of Africa. But then, I just wanted to focus on a positive side of Africa. This colorful dress and the fashion just really, caught my heart. All right.
A self-taught photographer, Yamamoto has carved a niche for himself with aspiring local models. His Instagram feed is a colorful collage of looks that has also drawn attention to the Senegalese fashion scene. Awa Claudine has dreamed of being an international model since she was 7 years old. She says Yamamoto's background gives him a unique aesthetic.
Daichi is a professional photographer, and he's also a foreigner. He has introduced to us a new culture and has also used his experience to make me better.
And it's not just the models who benefit from the exposure. Makeup artist Jessica Manuela says he was the only photographer who gave her a chance. Designer Mati Fowl is new in the fashion industry. She says Yamamoto took a risk using her clothes for his shoots.
Really helped me from the beginning by giving me strength, really, and confidence. Because every time I hear him, he's like, you have to do this, you have to do this. He really motivated me.
23-year-old Aisha Gui is one of Yamamoto's most successful models. She recently relocated to Europe to further her career. She spoke to VOA via FaceTime from Milan, where she is walking the catwalks for Fashion Week.
My agency in Milano here, they use the picture I took with Daichi has composites. Composite car to go to the casting, something like that.
Back in Senegal, Yamamoto is coaching a first-timer to pose with ease and grace. Chika Odua for VOA News, Dakar.
This news from VOA Asia. Family members of the passengers on board Malaysia Airlines aircraft MH370 that went missing in the South Indian Ocean have marked the fourth anniversary of the plane's disappearance at a memorial event in Kuala Lumpur. The anniversary comes amid a renewed search effort for the missing plane. You'll find big stories each day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, an Egyptian teenager has turned cables and sheets of aluminum and metal into a robotic exoskeleton that he says can one day help the disabled walk. We take a few steps with VOA's Faith Lapidus to learn more.
18-year-old Mansour Hamada turned a room in his house into a robotics laboratory and designed a suit that can detect the wearer's brain signals and translate them into movements of the affected limbs.
The robot is operated by something called brain-computer interface, using brain signals, meaning that I think of the movement and the robot translates this into an action. These brain sensors use what is referred to as EEG, and the robot was designed first and foremost to help people with disabilities.
Kamada, who is not paralyzed, conducted extensive research at physical therapy centers, consulted with brain surgeons, and studied electronics and mechanical engineering before starting his design. He says it was reviewed by professors at Zagazig University, who did not think it would work.
When I went to Zagazig University to present my idea to the professors, they didn't believe that the robot will work with brain sensors. But when they reviewed my research, they confirmed that what I told them was correct. And they were amazed and astounded that someone like me, who was a high school student, could invent something like this, which isn't available in Egypt.
The exoskeleton will be tested on a disabled person this month. Kamada hopes to continue to improve the design and go on to study engineering at university. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Well, it's that time. The Academy Awards, or Oscars, are being presented in Hollywood today, celebrating the movies and showcasing Hollywood glamour. Mike O'Sullivan reports from Los Angeles, where the ceremony will probably have some political moments in a year when many in Hollywood have their minds on politics.
The red carpet has been rolled out on Hollywood Boulevard, where the Oscars will be awarded in the Dolby Theater Sunday evening. Host Jimmy Kimmel can be counted on for jibes aimed at President Donald Trump. At other recent award shows, some women wore black, but are more likely to don symbolic pins, flowers, or ribbons to acknowledge the Me Too and Time's Up movements, which are demanding an end to harassment in the workplace, especially in entertainment, which has been rocked by repeated allegations of sexual assault. A street artist used accused abuser Harvey Weinstein as the theme of his Hollywood artwork, unveiled on Thursday.
As everybody knows, Hollywood, like so many other industries, has this dark underbelly which often goes ignored, or in this case has even been covered up and worse.
Some in Hollywood have seen a shift in mood.
People are a little bit more reserved, and in particular some of the celebrities I've seen, the tourists want to get a picture, they're a little bit careful, you know, they don't want to put their, there's no hugging or kissing, or you know what I'm saying.
Another possible theme that may be addressed by winners, gun violence, including the recent shooting deaths of 17 people at a Florida high school. Conservative critics say that Hollywood stars live in a liberal bubble, but popular entertainers, including Oprah Winfrey, have increasingly spoken out on women's and other issues. We will likely see more comments on the red carpet. Yet many around the world just want to be entertained, and many on Hollywood Boulevard just want a glimpse of the stars, like this security worker.
I'll probably be in the alley or somewhere watching that people don't get in without the proper passing, you know, or badges, yes. So, yeah, I'm going to be enjoying it. Everybody's happy here. Everybody's having a great time, you know. It's Hollywood Boulevard. This is what we wait for every year.
Producers say the goal of the Oscar telecast is to balance relevance and ratings and let winners have their say, but keep the show entertaining. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us online at iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our program or listen to us streaming each and every day on VOA Asia Facebook and also our website at voanews.com. Of course, we want to hear from you. Send us an email. voaasia@voanews.com is our address. We'd like to say hello to everybody listening via Facebook on VOA Burmese in Myanmar. Thanks for joining us today. Our thanks go to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer John Ellison, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.